morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott will be here speaking of the arts. We're also going to have a representative from the Santa Fe Folk Art Market, which is happening this weekend. Right now, I would like to welcome Peter Sellers. He's a world-renowned theater and opera director, and he is directing the United States premiere of Kaija Saariaho's opera Adriana Mater, which opens at the Santa Fe Opera on the 26th of July. And he wrote and the wonderful librettist of that, Amin Maalouf, is also going to be here in Santa Fe. He wrote the libretto to the opera Dr. Atomic with music by John Adams, and he directed the film version, which is screening this Sunday, the 13th of July, at the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe at noon, and it's part of a seminar from noon to 5 on Sunday called Singing About the Bomb, the Intersection of Politics and Opera. And after the screening of the film at 3 p.m., Peter Sellers and Ferenc Morten-Sass, who's the author of The Day the Sun Rose Twice, and Joseph Martz, who's principal associate director for weapons programs at Los Alamos, will be having a conversation about opera and contemporary issues, the nuclear age, and this particular opera. And there will also be a screening of Wonders Are Many, which is a documentary about the making of Dr. Atomic, and all of that is at the CCA as well. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, hey. Peter Sellers.
Good morning.
That's a long introduction.
That's a huge introduction. I'm impressed.
So tell us about the genesis of Dr. Atomic. You worked for a long time with John Adams. Do you come up with these things together?
Well, you know, everyone is totally shocking and new. There is no pattern at all. New things just turn out to be new things. This one was, in fact, came from the director of the San Francisco Opera, a woman who came in from Germany and thought, you know, shouldn't things be more progressive in America, because she was really used to, you know, kind of wild things happening in Germany, and most American opera companies have a profile of basic conservatism. And so she came to blow things up, and one of the things she wanted to do was a whole season of Faust operas, and her idea was the American Faust was Robert Oppenheimer. And so she asked John Adams to write a Faust opera.
That's very interesting.
Our first collaborator, Alice Goodman, who had written the libretto for Nixon in China, then informed Pamela Rosenberg that in fact, it's a little bit the opposite, is that at the end of his life, Faust lost his immortal soul, and at the end of his life, Robert Oppenheimer finally discovered he had one. And that, in fact, some weird thing airlifted Oppenheimer out of the nuclear world, and in fact, because his security clearance was revoked, you know, he ended his life in a very different way from how he began it. And some, you know, bizarre series of fates, you know, just said, you cannot continue in this work. That's pretty intense. And his public humiliation and kind of disastrous fall from being the most famous man in America to turning into a Cold War pariah, that was painful. It was emotionally, you know, devastating, and in some way saved him. And that's a pretty interesting way to go. Anyway,
in what sense do you think it saved him? I mean, his last biography was called American Prometheus.
Well, you know, again, one of the things about Oppie is, like, you know, Mozart and Shakespeare and a bunch of people like that, he left no autobiography. You really have no idea what made this guy tick. And his moral sense was incredibly refined, and at the same time, his sheer scientific ambition had no limits, and so he would agree to almost anything. And it's the almost that's really interesting, because he has very refined principles on one level. On the other level, we now see from the minutes of classified meetings that the things he was agreeing to and even suggesting, you know, and he was gung-ho for bombing Japan and so on, are a little shocking and out of character. And so, to me, that's the stuff of drama. I mean, you go in where you don't understand someone's motives. If you understand someone's motives, we don't need to make an opera. We got it. Whereas, you know, that's a cartoon character, or it's at least, you know, a fairly simple black and white operation. The fact that we will all be discussing Oppenheimer forever and still wondering, that means you've got to go in there not just with a kind of heavy-duty, you know, dental drills, but a 90-piece symphony orchestra, you know, a chorus of 75, and really magnificent soloists, and say, what's going on here? And I think one of the great things about opera is it's a great institutional art form. When you want to take on big institutions like the military-industrial complex, well, an opera is a very beautiful mirror of, you know, those logistics and that, you know, high pressure and, you know, all of these things that have to come together on the day. And that's kind of thrilling. And so we made the night of the first test at Alamogordo, you know, those 12 hours, that's the opera, that pressure cooker operation where the scientists are both in a kind of overdrive of adrenaline, you know, and then total burnout, exhaustion, and having been up night after night after night in the blazing desert heat, and then finally hallucinating at 3 a.m. while the rain continues. You know, this hallucinatory, strange thing where you're alone with your own worst ideas of what you've done and your own best ideas of what you've done. But we wanted the last pre-nuclear moments on Earth. And so the opera is actually just before the atomic age begins. And the opera ends as the atomic age dawns. So, you know, when people say, you know, these atom bombs have always been with us, well, no, they haven't. Could we, like, for a moment...
Who says that?
Well, it's, you know, they're treated as something you can't get rid of because they're now, like, part of the landscape. And you want to say, absolutely not. It is time to get rid of them. It is, and, you know, Obama has actually been on this for a long time, thank goodness, because he comes from the Chicago area, where, in fact, the most progressive nuclear scientists in America have for a long time, through the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and so on, really been saying it is time to eliminate all nuclear weapons. Not some, all. All.
I mean, we've talked to nuclear diplomats on this program who compare it to smallpox. Like, that's the metaphor for eradication.
It really is. And I have to say, the other thing that you know, people just have to figure out is they will never be positive, they will never be good, no one will ever win anything with them. You know, anytime you use them, you lose, because, you know, all of humanity will hold you in deepest contempt for generations. It's a lose-lose operation, and so it's really also time to re-divert billions of dollars into other things that are truly starved.
Like opera.
Well, you can start with that. You know, what's so
well,
cool?
I mean, like the arts. I mean, if you put even a 1% of what you're putting war into the arts, you'd have a renaissance in this country, the likes of which we've never seen.
It would be pretty awesome. And, of course, the cool thing about opera is it really does, you know, the Greeks kind of invented it when they were inventing democracy, and, you know, for the 10 minutes that it lasted in Greece before they big business bought it out. And, in fact, that cool thing of getting everybody together, you know, in one place and creating this kind of huge experience that's larger than any one person. That is a very powerful image of democracy. And really to try and see, well, wait a minute, can we find a collective pulse here? Can we find something that gets beyond this person or that person's private crisis? And can we move into something that is truly radically shared space? You know, and the 21st century is going to be about, can we share the planet? You know, how is it possible to actually create space, collaborative space? And what I love about opera is you have people coming from all these different disciplines working together, coming from all these different cultural viewpoints working together, and you've got to create something that, you know, isn't my point of view, it's not the librettist's point of view, it's not the composer's point of view, it's this bigger thing that actually we could all step back and begin to enter. That's powerful.
One of the things that I think is so striking about the opera and about the whole question of nuclear weapons is you're dealing with something that is just inconceivably massive, but it's created by human beings who, you know, before the test and after the test, eat cupcakes and worry about their relationships and sleep, and the human scale stays the same, and it's the dissonance of that is hard to deal with.
And in Los Alamos, not only eat cupcakes, but also have babies.
Right.
And for me, the image of these young scientists all working like 18 hours a day on this project of mass death and coming home and holding their brand new baby girl, that's really intense, you know, because Los Alamos, they had to, you know, they had to expand the maternity wards because everyone was having kids like crazy.
And affairs.
Yeah. So that, all of that kind of, those contradictions of mass birth and mass death all going on simultaneously and really at in the same hands. You're holding, you know, these plutonium elements and these little children. That's pretty intense imagery. And when you, you know, start moving deeply through it, you arrive at a place where the contradictions become, of course, unbearable. And that's a little bit of our hope in the arts, is get people to a place where you say, actually, you know, you can live within a contradiction. But then at a certain point, you say, this doesn't make sense.
Let's talk about the program on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Center for Contemporary Arts. You have the Associate Director for Weapons Programs from Los Alamos in the CCA. Has he seen the opera?
You know, he hasn't yet, and so that'll be really interesting to have his take on the screening. And because we'll show it at noon, we'll show the screening of the video. And I'll be really interested to see his take. And, of course, Fred Satz, the historian, I used an enormous number of details from his book, The Day the Sun Rose Twice, which is just a classic, and he's one of the few historians to actually interview working-class participants on the bomb. Most people interviewed, you know, famous scientists, but in fact, he spent time really figuring out what the grunts were thinking and feeling and noticing, and that's an incredible image, which takes you very, very far, again, in a democratic plane. So I'm really thrilled to be with these people.
So the Santa Fe Opera hasn't, oddly enough, done Dr. Atomic.
We'll talk about that in the next couple weeks. It does belong here.
It does seem like a natural thing to do here.
Pretty, you know, we see Los Alamos over our set every night.
Right.
You know, because that's of course the back view of the opera. When you're in the balcony, you see Los Alamos glittering in the distance, and the and it's part of the gorgeous scenery of Santa Fe Opera. I would just also say, what's cool with Santa Fe Opera is you can go at these things at different scales. Dr. Atomic is a monster scale, whereas what we're doing right now with Kaija Saariaho and Amin Maalouf, you know, four characters are on stage to actually deal with the sum total of violence in the world.
Right.
And it's exactly the opposite of Dr. Atomic, and yet it's also what opera does. Is Kaija wanted to write an opera about a mother. And because her mother had just died. And Amin, of course, is so often dealing with these parts of the world, like Chechnya, like the Balkans, like Darfur, like places where the question is, how can you raise kids in a place where there is just nonstop violence? Not only what are we doing now, but what does this mean 20 years from now? What does this mean 40 years from now? And Amin made this amazing, amazing text with just four people, in which we see, you know, in a war zone that is unspecified, finally a young man raping a young woman, a young man who's just joined the local militia, and she's pregnant, and she decides to keep this child. And then the story unfolds 17 years later when, you know, the father, who is, you know, one of those people who's in front of the war crimes tribunal at The Hague, I mean, somebody who's guilty of crimes against humanity, will this young man kill his father, which is really what he wants to do?
Right.
Or is there going to be a possibility on Earth that the next generation doesn't have to fight their parents' battles? And could we actually begin to break these cycles of violence in places like Israel and Palestine, in places like, you know, Sri Lanka, in places like all over the world where we're having nonstop proliferation of ongoing low-intensity warfare, which then flares up over and over and over again. And what we have seem not been able to break through diplomatically, not been able to break through militarily. Where is the breakthrough in these sites that are now going? Chechnya is now in its third genocide. You know, how do you begin that? And what does it mean in our generation that there are more genocides in the last 25 years than any period in the history of the Earth? You know, it's so intense to be alive right now. What kind of testimony are we offering? What kind of requiem are we offering? And meanwhile, what kind of view for turning the page are we offering? So what's beautiful about being able to work on Dr. Atomic, you know, on one side, and then turn around and be with Kaija Saariaho, this, first of all, woman composer. So it's a new era in opera that the music is written by women. Thank you. And Amin Maalouf, one of the great Arab novelists, one of the great Arab intellectuals, offering a view from the Arab world of where are we? We can't just use the word democracy because that word doesn't mean anything anymore. We have actually emptied these key words of meaning. And how can we give the meaning back to these words? How can we actually find a way to honestly turn the page of history in these parts of the world where the levels of hypocrisy are just unbearable?
One of the things that you're talking about is the role of the opera, the role of the arts in actually not only dealing with these conflicts psychologically, but actually making a difference. And I'm struck that the associate director for weapons programs is actually going to be there, because it seems like there's usually such a huge gulf between the people who are actually enacting these programs and the people who are protesting them, thinking about them, dealing with them artistically, and so on.
One of the cool things about opera is who's in the audience. Because opera is a very exclusive art form, and so you have the power structure in the best seats. You have diplomats, you have heads of corporations, you have, this is the opera crowd, and at the same time, you have fanatical, mad students and wild fans who have been lining up for hours to get in. And you have this amazing cross-section of a society that you don't get anywhere else. Is, you know, the big money is there. The people of influence are there. And so in opera, you can address them directly. And you are speaking across the boardroom table, not down on the street holding a picket sign.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. That's what's so powerful about opera as a form. And you're not using propaganda. Propaganda is how to convince people of something. You know, everything in America is so damn propagandized right now. Everybody's trying to sell us something all the time. You know, what's so cool about music and poetry and visual art is all those things combined are actually giving you a complex picture that goes beyond any kind of propagandized universe. In fact, it's the opposite. It's returning your taste for complexity, returning your taste for, you know, this simultaneous interaction of forces, which is what's so delicious in opera. And so, you know, because you're actually having this simultaneous sensual overload of sound, image, movement, and this rich intellectual loam. And it's just so it's genuinely overwhelming, and you're going to ecstatic places. So that's like something propaganda can't do, something that's missing from like the democratic debate on TV. And you know, and so you're moving inside people's pores, and you're getting at them in the space that is like deeply unconscious before they have formed who they think they are, you know, and you're moving into this way richer, more mobile, more fluid sense of identity and possibility. And that's so cool. And the music particularly is irresistible. It moves inside you in ways you cannot describe, and you are powerless to deal with. And that is fabulous.